Yo, everyone, welcome back to Brand New Techish. We in the building. It's Michael Behane with the amazing
Abba Jesse.
You know what they say, there are decades where nothing happens, and then there are weeks where decades happen. I think that's Lenin. Don't quote me.
Damn.
On that.
All right, dropping bombs over here. Philosopher King in the bomb. House.
You don't know. Yeah, so, I mean, Abba, speak on that, because, like, I feel like so much has happened the last time since me and you spoke. And
it feels like we spoke 10 years ago. What happened, man?
You know what? I just feel like conversations that we've been having and conversations that have been happening in certain circles now have just hit the mainstream. Everything from reining in police in terms of defunding the police, in terms of everything, to our industry, in terms of venture capital going to black founders.
Yes.
In terms of, I know you did a workshop recently on
how to discuss race at work. Yeah. People are talking about the black pay gap. People are talking about decolonizing the curriculum. It's getting deep, man. Yeah. It's getting heavy.
Let's start with the conversation regarding venture capital flowing into black founders, because there seems to have been overnight all of this movement. So, you know, we talk about SoftBank so often. They're the ones that poured this money into WeWork, which was a failed investment, really. They put money into Uber. They're big, big money spenders. And now they're like, quickly, we're going to put together a $100 million fund for founders of color, right? And then Andreessen Horowitz, now they're like, we're doing a $2 million fund program, similar to what Arlen was doing with Backstage Capital Accelerator. They're doing one. Like, what do you think? Is this all, you know, is it just like, welcome to the conversation, well done, like, welcome to see you, like, we're happy to see you? Or is it like, we want to see some more? Like, what do you think? What's your initial impression of all of this?
My impression of it is that it's not going to create the lasting change and the impact that we really want to see. That's my headline thing, because, you know, exactly to your point, everything is changing, and I hope are going through a paradigm shift, which is this appreciation of every approach we've taken to increasing representation and equality so far has actually been completely wrong. We've been equipped with the wrong tools. We've been tackling the problem the wrong way. And this paradigm shift is our realization that this is not just about policy strategy. This is about our own consciousness and awareness of the role that we as individuals play in blocking progress to equality. So it's like, over the last few weeks, we realized racism is a white problem. Lack of women in tech is a male problem, right? So we've shifted the blame from the victims and the people suffering to the people creating the trauma and the suffering. And I think that's really where the opportunity is. And the reason why these responses from the venture world are so incredibly disappointing is because they're basically addressing the fact that, we know that you're not going to access our main fund because you are probably inferior, as we have believed all this time and continue to believe. Therefore, we are delegating off this tiny little side fund, which will probably, you know, just generally perceive as lower standard and lower quality. But hey, you can have it. Meanwhile, we'll keep focusing on this main fund. What I want people to see is a commitment to increase representation of Black founders in their main fund. I don't want no side initiative. That's like back in the day, Jim Crow stuff. Oh, you know, no blacks, no dogs, no Irish. Okay, let's go sit over there in our own little corner. Let's get to the back of the bus, Rosa Parks. Like, what the actual fuck? Is this equality? Or is this just like trying to kind of put a Band-Aid on a friggin' surgical wound that needs real help?
I think if you're going to do something like this, why don't you just give the money to like an island? Like, why has it's taken so long for anyone to say, Arlen, here's $100 million.
Thank
I know
you.
She had the accelerator, right? And I haven't been obviously been given a total information about how much money she's had in her arsenal, but I'm guessing it's nowhere near that amount, right? So like, why double up? Why not give it to somebody who's been putting the work in, who's got the network already, instead of doing these like side funds, like you said? But yeah, like you said, I don't think it's going to be any real lasting change. I'm cautiously not so pessimistic. Maybe there might be some, you know, good that comes of it. There might be, you know, a handful of founders that get some money where they wouldn't have got some before. So anything is, you know, okay. But like you said, on a macro level, come on, guys, like, let's do better. And I say guys because it predominantly is guys anyway. That's all I got, really. I think just give the money to people that are doing the work already. In other news, Alexis Ohanian, so the co-founder of Reddit and also the husband of Serena Williams, give a shout, give us a clap for Serena Williams. Just gonna want that. Go around, do that now. He has stepped down from the board of Reddit and said, listen, I want to give my seat to somebody who is of color, a black person specifically, and every bit of money that I make from here on in from my Reddit stock is going to go to causes that are, you know, going to benefit the black community. He's donated $1 million to Colin Kaepernick's nonprofit. I think it's Know Your Rights Camp, which works with helping young black boys know their rights in terms of dealing with the police. To me, I think this is great. I mean, I've seen some feedback where some people have been a bit harsh, but I think, like, it's, I haven't seen anybody else do this. Let's keep it real. Like, this is
true,
like,
say, homie. True say. Pretty,
yeah, who else is doing, who's actually, because there's one thing about saying, oh, I'm going to give some money. There's another thing about moving out of the way. He literally has moved out of the way and said, yo, I don't need this spot. I don't deserve this spot. This spot should go to somebody who has a different voice than mine. And obviously he's got a black daughter, he's got a black wife, so that probably helps him, you know what I'm saying, in understanding, you know, it brings it home, the reality of it all.
I think what we are seeing is someone acknowledging that more types of actions and experiments need to be done to really move the needle. And yeah, as he said in his video, resigning is a form of power that leadership can use. It's a statement. And yep, I think it was really powerful that he made this decision to basically say, look, you know, this is the thing. When we start to look at privilege as a tool, this is what I talk about in Hustle Crew all the time. We talked about this in my workshop yesterday. Privilege isn't something you should be shying away from. It is something that you should engage with actively and think about how it can either hurt or help equality. And I think in this case, Alexis Ohanian is like, wow, okay, I'm so friggin' privileged. I still have this board seat. Why don't I give this board seat to someone with less privilege who can shape the agenda more effectively? Yeah. And I would love to see more people doing that. But this is what we don't ever really talk about, and we're still not talking about. And that's kind of what's missing for this to truly be a real paradigm shift. We need to talk about the fact that things are the way they are because it benefits the people who have control and they like things the way they are. Okay, I'm not convinced Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, any of these people, Elon Musk, I'm not convinced any of them actually do want things to change. I'm convinced that they like things the way they are. The Koch brothers, all these friggin' Forbes rich list people, they are participating in the system of oppression and they're maintaining it. They're actively maintaining it. And there are a lot of people looking at what's happening and investing more in their bunkers. 100%.
Absolutely.
100%. Yeah, there are a lot of people who are like, I'm not engaging with this shit. Let me just empty my Swiss bank account, get my family in this bunker. Yeah. Let me wait this out. Or they're going to be jumping on the next SpaceX friggin' rocket.
And you got to realize as well, like, I got a quote from Ellen Powell, who was actually the CEO of Reddit at one point. She says, you don't get to say Black Lives Matter when Reddit nurtures and monetizes white supremacy and hate all day long. So this is actually, you know, quite a nuanced conversation, because Reddit has many forums that are just pure KKK, like Donald Trump supporting forums that have just, like, you know, made black people's lives worse because they're actually spreading and disinformation, spreading white supremacy. So, you know, if you're somebody who has financially benefited from Reddit, you're not necessarily got your hands clean. So the fact that he's doing something like this is at least an admittance that perhaps I could have done better, we could have done better. This is a step in the right direction, right? You know, does that play into your mind at all in terms of the decision that Reddit does kind of have, like, that nefarious dark side underbelly where there's a lot of BS squandering under there? And
oh,
that,
yeah, he created, you know, a monster.
Maybe they might be trying to kill. Yeah,
he created a monster. Also, he's profited off of a monster. I mean, he didn't really go as far as saying that. That's kind of what was missing from the video, because I was like, yo, I've been on Reddit. I do not feel welcome there. And I mean, let's face it, like, a lot of Y Combinator companies are, you know, white supremacist. I mean,
Sam,
just
do you remember the company called Gab? Do you remember? It was like, basically, these guys were like, oh, Twitter doesn't have free speech, so we're going to create a Twitter which has complete free speech, where there's no rules about what you could say. And it quickly turned into just like Nazi.com.
It was, wow,
like Milo Yiannopoulos. Yeah, and I think even a few YC people, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but I think even a few YC people was like, oh, this is a great idea because, you know, Twitter is clamping down on free speech. And you saw what happened. I'm not anti-free speech per se, like, don't get it twisted, but fam, like, there's got to be some rules in the room, because otherwise, like, you're going to get flipping Adolf Hitler Jr. up in here.
Also, can I just say, this free speech argument only applies to white people. When jihadists go on YouTube and share their interpretations of whatever, everyone's bringing them down, calling in the Geneva Convention human rights violation. Yes. Are they not entitled to free speech? And then when white people say racist shit, it's like, oh, free speech. Oh, no, free speech.
They would make the argument that, oh, listen, jihadist rhetoric directly leads into violence. But I would also argue that white supremacy directly leads into violence when you look at what happened to George Floyd,
Breonna Taylor, Bellie Majinga. Well, come on.
There's a causal link, you know, from a society that has white supremacist ideas to a society that has white supremacist police. And to me, like, that's clear cut. But the other example is, yeah, If, try and say something about Winston Churchill that's actually factual. Like, oh, Winston Churchill had racist beliefs. Winston Churchill
was so racist. Literally, in the Collins book, he says that quote. What did he say about Indian people? That he would, like, happily extinguish them with nerve gas?
Essentially, there was a thing where he redirected food away from India during the Second World War, and it led to the Bengal famine, which about millions of people died. And when they wrote a letter to him saying, yo, can you please, like, help us? Like, he was like, it's your own fault for breeding too much. You're a beastly people. This is a quote verbatim, written documentation, yeah? Now, if you start talking about this on a mainstream platform or on anything, you will get harassed, fam, because people start clutching their pearls because they realize they don't want free speech. They want their speech. If anything compromises your reality or your perceived, you know, false reality, you don't want to hear it either.
Hey, everybody. This episode is sponsored by a good friend of Tekish and one of my all-time favorite people in the universe. Huge inspiration to me. Very accomplished tech leader, Arlen Hamilton, and her brand new book, It's About Damn Time, How to Turn Being Underestimated into Your Greatest Advantage. Now, if you're like me and you've ever felt underestimated for any reason, this is definitely the book for you. I highlighted so many sections. Honestly, I wish I read it sooner. In the book, Arlen drops so many gems on how she went from being homeless on food stamps to being a pioneering venture capitalist in Silicon Valley, setting up the legendary Backstage Capital, which has gone on to invest over $7 million in more than 130 companies, all led by underrepresented founders. So, if you want to know how a Black gay woman broke into the boys' club of Silicon Valley with no network, no context, not even a college degree, go get your coffee. This book is for you. I think for all of us, we need that handbook of resilience. We need that playbook for advancing our careers. And this is absolutely that Bible for success that should be taking a prime spot on your bookshelf. I know I, for one, will never take it out of my backpack. That's how real it is.
Yeah, listen, 100%. I think I read this whole book in like one day's flat and I underlined the whole damn thing. And definitely, like, my favorite part is how she managed to hustle her way backstage to she managed to hustle her way backstage at a conference to speak to like a leading VC when everybody was trying to scramble for the dude's attention. And she managed to do it because it typifies the kind of mindset you need. You've got to outsmart the competition, especially when you're starting off like us, when you're coming from behind. And then even like when she talks about the power of information, like turning yourself into an asset, essentially, to the point where she leveled up and then she became an industry expert, all off just reading newsletters, podcasts, books. And definitely this book has got to be part of your journey to help you level up. So yeah, It's About Damn Time. The link will be in the show notes. If you do get the book, use the hashtag Tekish, take a picture of it, send it to us. We love like knowing that you take our opinion seriously. So like, yeah, It's About Damn Time, link in the show notes.
Obviously, a lot of tech CEOs have been putting out statements showing their solidarity with Black Lives Matter. Some have been quite silent. Some have, you know, been quite forceful in their, you know, in their words. Evan Spiegel came out and said he's pro reparations. I never thought I'd see the day.
Hot damn! Well, all right, this guy's my man now.
He was like, cut the check for the Black people in the room, like, do it now, kind of thing. So, Evan Spiegel, I'm gonna have to get like a Snapchat after that one, boy, or Snap, sorry. What have you made about all of the statements that have come out? There was even a little altercation on Twitter where it's not tech, but PG Tips and Yorkshire Tea came out in solidarity of Black Lives Matter after some of their consumers came out and said, oh, thank the Lord that PG Tips kept quiet on this whole Black Lives Matter thing. And they were like, oh, hold on, we Black Lives Matter, don't get twisted, we're not racist, you know what I'm saying? But then some people were like, but then hold on, what, your plantations in Kenya, what's going on there? Anyways, so does this all feel genuine to you? Does this all just feel like a PR statement? Does this all just feel like, this is a loaded question, does it all feel like virtue signaling? Like, all of you think there's some
there
genuine
has been so
like, sentiment?
Much. There's been a lot of virtue signaling. I mean, even my friends were telling me about L'Oreal fired Monroe Bergdorf because she explicitly came out, you know, against racism and all this kind of stuff, only to run a campaign a few days later saying it's important to express yourself, you know? And I just think there is definitely a ton of virtue signaling. There've also been a lot of like, similar to what we said in the last episode, like white people trying to be allies, but making it about them instead of making it about us and our trauma and our struggles. But I like the people who are showing their allyship by listening to the community, amplifying the work that the community are doing, or in Evan Spiegel's case, which I just found out about, directing the funds to us. I mean, I was reading this article about how here in the UK, where we are, slave-owning families demanding compensation from the government. It was agreed to be given to them. We as taxpayers, yeah. right? So me and you, Michael, here in the UK working and living, we have been paying like slave owners up until 2015. So that means from 2009, Absolutely. When I like graduated until 2015, I, as a Black woman, was contributing to paying people that persecuted my ancestors. What the actual fuck?
Yeah, basically, so the interest on the debt. So when slavery ended, people say, oh, like, people say there can't be reparations. Reparations were paid for slavery. They just paid to the slave owners. In the UK anyway. In the US, there was the Civil War, whatever. But in the UK, we paid slave owners for their assets. I said, okay, give up slavery. We'll pay you, in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars. And that debt was still being paid to this day, essentially. And David Cameron, our former prime minister, so the leader of this country, was a direct claimant of that money, basically. So that's just how fucked the history is. Something that's also changed in the news. IBM has basically ended all of its facial recognition work. So essentially, IBM had built software that helped law enforcement with facial recognition. Facial recognition software has been known for quite some time to misidentify people of color much more than it does white people. And if you look at basically how often Black and brown people are disproportionately in the prison system, you just know this is a dangerous thing. Even, for example, if you've gone to these protests, there's a good chance you are now in some kind of facial recognition database. I personally believe that.
Oh, absolutely. Mate, you don't even... Yeah, so, I mean, even just tracking your phones, they'll find you through that. But yeah.
Right. And I looked into this once I saw that IBM had like ended it. I was like, okay, what's going on here? Like, wow, companies are really getting woke out here. Are they really turning down like millions of dollars in sales here because they work quite closely with law enforcement? I looked into it. Turns out that actually for IBM, it wasn't even that profitable. They weren't even making that much money. Amazon software, who also has facial recognition software, wasn't even that well regarded within law enforcement. So I feel like this is this kind of thing we've got to keep an eye on, where companies are using the moment to ditch things or to put forward proposals that they were going to do anyway, and now it looks good. I don't know, Abba, like, maybe I'm being too skeptical. Talk to me. Am I being too skeptical here? Like,
no, of course not. Of course not. Look.
I don't know why I asked. I knew you agree with me.
Of course not. Change isn't going to happen without a fight. I've been thinking about this more and more, and I was like, you know, maybe this is even, like, related in some ways to, like, the actual biology of shit. Like, is there any version of reality that will not generate some form of inequality? I guess we don't know that, right? Like, we don't have enough data. But, you know, if we create a perfect simulation and then start again from the beginning and roll it forward and you know, tweak and change and whatever, like, probably we're still going to end up with some kind of version of something where there is a group that share some common affinity who probably oppress a group of a different affinity. And I think what we have to appreciate is that if this system benefits you, why will you change it? Like, our whole history as humans has not been a history of optimizing for equality, optimizing for peace, optimizing for fairness. No, we have optimized for self-interest. We have optimized for the accumulation of wealth. This is why there's an argument against hypercapitalism going on right now, because people are saying it's completely messed up that while half the population are suffering, you know, a handful of people could completely pay off all their debts, help them out, and like still, you know, fly to the moon and back. So no, I think you're absolutely right. People are going to do what they can to behave in a self-interested way, but they're going to put a cloak of Black Lives Matter, equality, or whatever on it. We, like, more than ever, I feel, at least maybe because of the age I am in my life, that I feel like I've truly never existed in a time where there's been more blatant lying by the people we're supposed to trust. And I feel like that's been happening everywhere. You know, here in the UK, and all of us have felt this, wherever you're listening, your government's response to the coronavirus. You hear one thing on the news, you see something else happening in reality. It's happening in tech right now. They're saying they're making things better. They're saying they want to change and all that. But we can see with our own very eyes, as we are interacting with their products and observing the behavior of their leadership, that that is not the case. So where do we go with this? Because we're trying to behave like rational beings, but our own senses are deceiving us now.
Yeah, I mean, look, if I hadn't really like dug deep a bit and read a few more articles past the headline, I would have been suckered in and been like, IBM, like, what a great, you know, initiative there by the CEO. And that's what they wanted me to think. I mean, listen, you know, maybe they left a few million dollars on the table, but it's a rounding error for a company of that magnitude and that size, right? If it was a viable business, if it was a cash cow, I don't believe for 1 second they'd drop it. They might say we'd do some reform, we'll do some tweaking around the edges, right? But I mean, people are going to work in their own self-interest, like you said, unfortunately.
I wanted wanted to just draw everyone's attention to Bo Ren. She's an amazing advocate for greater inclusion in tech, but, you know, first and foremost, she's an incredible product manager. She's worked at some of the best companies, Facebook, Tumblr. She's really a legend in the product space. And over the weekend, she wrote a Twitter thread kind of opening up, basically saying she's breaking her silence about offer negotiations as a woman of color in tech. And in this thread, right, she highlights how she, while she was at Facebook, realized why sharing salary information with other women of color, that they were all paid at the very least 20% less than their white peers. Then when they shared information about their negotiation process, they had all been told that the offer was non-negotiable, that they'd really pushed themselves to the limit to get them the absolute max. And so, of course, all of them accepted, assuming that was the case. Then when they spoke to their white colleagues, their white colleagues were not told that. Their white colleagues were not told this is the best offer, you can't negotiate it. So all the white colleagues negotiated for 20% more. And then she went on to say how when she left Facebook, another tech company also reached out to her saying, oh, listen, like, you know, we've really like gone out of the way to like give you this job title of senior PM and blah, 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 blah. And then she was just like, yeah, but I want the compensation to match it. And they did this big whole song and dance about basically you should be grateful for the fact you're getting senior PM title and you're not going to get any more. And in the end, she went to another tech company instead who were going to pay her better. The reason this really struck a chord with me is because just last week I was talking to one of my best friends I went to university with. He works for a big tech company. We graduated from in the same degree, you know, same industry. He literally earns 2x what I earn. And it's because he's a white guy.
Have I met this person? I met this person, right, in the States.
Yeah, exactly.
I know the company. Yeah, I was looking at pictures.
The reason I was really frustrated by this is because this is exactly why I started Hustle Crew. This is exactly what I saw was happening. We are told different things to our white peers in this industry, right? When my straight white friend gets a job offer and he pushes back and he's told, oh, okay, great. Yeah, let's have a think and like we'll come back to you. There have been times where I've copied his exact strategies. I have been shouted at. I've been told I'm ungrateful. I've been told I'm clearly not a team player. I've been told I'm clearly not interested in the role. You know, we're looking for people who are with us for the long term. We're looking for people who believe in the vision. We're not looking for people who are like just self-interested and wanting to like maximize our salary. You know, if you want to be a high earner, go work in banking. What kind of ridiculous bullshit is that I've heard in my career because I'm a black woman asking for my market rate? So I don't know, like that thread for me was just so eye-opening. And then, you know, I shared it. Oh my goodness, the number of DMs I had from people of color in tech saying, I've been told that's not negotiable. I've been told it's non-negotiable. Ain't no white people sliding into my DMs telling me they were told it's non-negotiable. And you know, the most messed up thing, as one of my friends told me, was that the people telling her offers are non-negotiable are often women of color themselves.
Oh, wow. Really? Because that completely refuted what I was going to say next. Because I was going to be like, yeah, you know, I was going to say, listen, as much as all the work that we can do in terms of helping people level up negotiation skills, all the work we can do in terms of, you know, banding together to kind of, you know, almost act as an unofficial union and say, okay, what salary did you get? What salary did you get, right? That can only reach a certain limit because we need people to be, who are the gatekeepers, and I probably assumed, well, they were white, to not lowball us and to say, listen, I don't want to be that person who is lowballing black people, women of color, you know, people of color in general, right? We need those gatekeepers to actually step up and say, yo, I want to be an anti-racist and actually not perpetuate the system, right? Because there's only so much that a victim can fix the system. If you're a victim, it's very hard to upend the system. It's the victimizer who has to say, no, we can't do this. We shouldn't do this. This is wrong. But the fact that you're saying that often it's women of color, I don't know, that's depressing. I think a lot of times, you know, I've seen firsthand just black people in general, like sometimes you want to be the best. I don't know if I was going to say something really rude there, but you want to be, you get put in a position and you're so grateful for that position that you're willing to enact more inequities than somebody else because you're just like, I've got to prove that I'm, you know, I'm willing to push the line more than anybody because my position here is so precarious anyways, that I've got to show that I'm the good one. I'm the one who's going to say, no, actually, I'm going to save us the most amount of money and screw you over, right? I don't know. Do you think there's something to that? Like, have you seen that in the workplace? Because I've seen that so many times.
I don't know.
So why would that person who's, you know, in those examples, be so unfair, essentially? What is the reason behind that?
Because they are underestimating the impact of that decision they're making. In that moment, they're weighing out, you know, oh, they're just like, this is my job. I need to do my job.
Got you.
This is what I've been instructed to do. And this is the thing, like, we are complicit in acts of evil constantly. Throughout our history, we've done this, right? Like, this is a very human thing to do. We can kind of like ignore our moral code for a second because we can start to normalize the behaviors when we're living in like a kind of evil organization. And, you know, what I've started to realize is that in tech, we have normalized a lot of fucked up evil shit. We've normalized the superiority of white people and the inferiority of black people, even though there's no evidence for it. We've also normalized the superiority of men over women, even though, again, there's no evidence for that. I mean, if anything, here in the UK, women get more first degrees than men, and they have done for years and years and years. So, you know, then people might who aren't in tech might say, well, why are you in tech then, you know, Abadesi, if it's so friggin' toxic? And this is what I say, because it is the best industry, you know.
It is
the future, and it's amazing. And if anything, the fact that we are still here telling you to come join us whilst telling you how bad it is must tell you how good it is despite all that, right?
Right. Listen, yeah, it's the future. And if you look at the possibility of the use of tech are so broad and varied. It can be used for evil. It can be used for amazing things. And we want to push it to be used for amazing things. If it wasn't for smartphones, a lot of this shit would have been under wraps. I looked at the police report of George Floyd's murder. Yeah. What they said in that police report made me sick to my stomach. They were like, the gentleman had medical issues and he passed away. That's what they said. They lied. If it wasn't for smartphones, we wouldn't know any of this. So thank the Lord that we have smartphones and we have technology. That is a beneficial use of tech, right? And I want to fight for an industry where technology is used for good, because the possibilities are endless. And that's why we're here. But what I will say is that the fight for representation is important. But those of us who are listening and those of us who, you know, care about this, we have to also be careful that when we get people in, they're not just perpetuating the existing system. Like, we have to make sure, I don't know how we do it, honestly. I'm just talking, you know, stream of consciousness right now. I don't know how this happens, how we shift the mindset. But those of us who do get into these institutions can't just be replicating the system, which is what happens where you might get a woman of color saying to another woman of color, oh, I'm sorry, it's non-negotiable, because that's just the way it's done, right? Like, we need to upend the system in a way, right? So how do we do that? Is there a way of doing that? Or is it just like, listen, we've got the representation, we hope for the best. That's it. Like, how do you train in? Is it like...
It's everything. Look, I was reading this quote yesterday in a book, and it was Aristotle. And he was saying, we are what we repeatedly do. Yeah. Excellence, therefore, is not an act, but a habit.
Habits, yeah.
And we keep trying to fix the world with acts, and we're not trying to fix the world with habits. So let's change our habits at an individual and institutional level to optimize for anti-racism and pro-blackness. That's how we change it. And I don't just mean people listening. I mean, especially the white people listening. In fact, here's something. If you are white and you listen to Techish, can you please talk to your white friends about the things you hear us talk about in Techish?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Listen, there is a massive role for white people in this struggle, in the sense that I was looking at some of the protests in central London or black areas in America, and they had, like, you know, it was a mixed coalition of people, which is fantastic. But I would love also for, you know, white people to go protest in Essex, which is a predominantly white area, or in their little rural back town, wherever they're from growing up, right? Because we can't really go there, like I said in the last episode, and we can't necessarily, you know, have that presence and be listened to. So there is a role where if you have a voice, because just based literally just based on your skin color, use it, please, and use it for good.
Okay, well, at least we have some good news. I've been inundated with requests of how to actually take action, and we need to take action even when the BLM hashtag stops. So we launched Hustle Crew membership this week. We're opening up our toolbox. For the last 4 years, we've been working with CEOs and CTOs and other business leaders to help them understand bias, privilege, and structural oppression and mitigate their impact on everything from culture to product design. We want to teach you how to do that. So $15 a month, every week, you'll receive case studies, videos by me, all about bias, discrimination, academic research that shows you how to solve for those problems. And every month, free workshops, just like the How to Discuss Race at Work webinar I did yesterday. So please check it out, hustlecrew.co/membership, and circulate it in your networks.
That's dope. Yo, everyone, that's been this week's Techish. Thanks for tuning in. Catch us on the hashtag Techish. Let us know what's up. Support us on patreon.com for extra Techish. We've got our podcast called Extra Ish just for our Patreon listeners. So go join that. And we'll catch you next week. Let us know what you thought. And we'll talk to you later. Peace.
Bye.